You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff from Joe Thomas. Really good stuff. Talking about the Browns-Titans matchup on Sunday. The Titans went in there last year to begin the season and just throttled them in the second half. And now, as we sit here a year and, 3 months later, it's a matchup of 2-8-3 teams, which the Browns were not 8-3 at this point last year. It was a disastrous season. Their coach got fired after one season, and now they've got a new outlook on their season. We'll find out when we do our top 10. I don't know. We usually do it on Tuesdays, but how do we do it if we don't know the results of the Browns-Ravens? So I'm trying to push it, but hopefully if this game goes off on Wednesday, I guess then we'll be able to do it on Thursday. If it doesn't happen, then we'll just probably have to go on and take it into account.
How much movement did you guys have last week when you did?
Pretty good. Pretty good amount.
Yeah. I was thinking
about it. A lot of shuffling.
I was thinking about it when I was out, and I was like, yeah. Yeah, there's probably a lot of shuffling around.
Nothing stayed the same for me except for Seattle at 9 in both weeks. That was the only team that stayed exactly the same.
So except for, well, what about the top? Like the Steelers and the Chiefs.
Well, that went without saying. Nothing had changed on that front. They had both won, and so it was going on the premise of Pittsburgh and KC in no particular order, the two best teams in the league, and then going from there. So
I had the Saints 3 both weeks.
Yep. I had the Saints 3 this past week. I did not have them 3 the previous week because I wanted to see how the Hill experiment played out. By the way, to me, the more we watch the Bucks. Starting to wonder, should Jameis Winston take all the heat for all the picks last year? Or is it more about the system that Bruce Arians installs for his team?
Pass protection is everything for that team. Pass protection, everything.
Because now Tom Brady is an interception machine.
Could you guys see a scenario, because we kind of briefly brought this up yesterday. I mean, if it turns out to be a you-know-what contest between Bruce Arians and Tom Brady, Tom Brady's going to win. Just the guy with 6 Super Bowl rings is going to win, no doubt. So if Arians gets pushed out, does Tom make a push for Josh McDaniels to get his guy that he knows is going to come in and let him do his thing?
Well, you're going on the assumption Tom Brady will be back. We don't know if he'll be back. He may get disgusted by this season. We don't know how the season's going to play out for the Bucks. Now they've dropped 5 games. They're 7-5. And by the way, that'll be a big shuffle in my top 10 because they're going to keep sliding down the board and may slide completely out. We'll see when we do our top 10. But I don't know. I still think he's in line to be Bill Belichick's successor in New England. But I don't know.
But even though he's 44 years old, you have a determined Tom Brady that wants to win one more without Belichick. You have a good team that you'd be inheriting if you're Josh McDaniels, and right now they're obviously, even though record aside, I mean they have more talent than New England. I think if that's an opportunity for Josh McDaniels, I think he would do it, and Tom would be behind the scenes pushing for that.
But again, we can't make the assumption that the season, because it's in a lull right now, will not come back around.
Sure.
Because every team, not every team, a lot of good teams do go through a lull, right? I still fully believe that the Ravens will come back around and be good by the end of the season. I could be wrong.
But if they lose,
I think they will.
To the Steelers, they're going to be 6-5.
Yeah. There are teams that are 6-5 at one point in the season and end up 10-6, and by the end of the year come around. I think the Bucks. I'm not ready to think that the wheels are going to fall off here, not just yet. But they've got weaknesses, but they just don't look as strong. Right now they're in a lull. Can they get out of it? That's sort of the story of the year. Seahawks, what's the question for them? Defense. Last couple weeks, they found some defense.
Well, they have found bodies getting back in the lineup. Yeah. That's helped them a lot.
It's helping them.
You think Jamal Adams makes a big difference on that defense?
Doesn't
watch
hurt.
Last night. Well, he's their best pass rusher. So, yeah, I'd say he makes a huge difference. And he had been out
but
for a while.
Figuring out how to get a little bit better and improve on your weaknesses during the course of the year is a big, big part of the story in an NFL season.
Well, I think the biggest problem that Bruce Arians and a lot of people are really starting to call him out for it is that there's just no balance in their run and their pass. They're just pass, 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 and they don't do a very good job of balancing the run. I mean, look what Arthur Smith did. I mean, how many times do you see that in an NFL game in the first half against the Colts? Did you guys notice the rushing yards to the passing yards?
Yeah, it was exactly the same.
Exactly
Ryan Eagle,
the
who's
same.
Joining us at noon, pointed that out.
You know what's exactly crazy, though? The same.
You know what's interesting, though, is Jones has had a good year. His statistics, he's got 800 and something yards. It's not like they can't run it.
Well, I didn't say they can't run it. I said that's the knock on Bruce Arians. This is the heat he's getting, or the criticism he's getting from a lot of people, is that's the problem. He abandons the run too fast. He doesn't really put a heavy emphasis on the run. It's just all really about pass. And, look, it's just like anything. The more you do something, the more you're setting yourself up for, you know, risk and chance and mistakes, right? The more you do it. So if you're going to sling it around and all you're going to do is pass, 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 well, yeah, you're setting your quarterback up for failures.
But Ronald Jones is fourth in the NFL in rushing yards. So it doesn't look to me like that's an offense with no balance.
How many carries does he have?
Enough to get 820 yards.
How many carries does he have?
162.
How does that stack up against the other guys?
Well, let's look. Well, we know Derrick Henry's got by far the most. I have to find rushing attempts leaders. I don't have that in front of me, but that's 11 games. He's only played 9 games. Is that right? No, that's not right. 162, he's projected for 216 carries.
Derrick Henry's leads everybody with 256 rushing attempts.
He's got way more than anybody else.
Dalvin Cook's got 219. Josh Jacobs has 207.
Okay.
Those
are
the only guys.
162, that's a lot. Plus, he's not the only guy who's carried the football. Leonard Fournette gets some carries. They had LeSean McCoy for a while. They had Keyshawn Vaughn for a while.
Kenyon Drake's had 168, and he's been hurt for half the season.
Right, but you're trying to argue that they don't give the ball to the running backs at all. I just don't see that in their
well,
stats.
Well, when they had a game and they had 5 rushing attempts, don't you think that's a problem?
Yeah,
5 rushing attempts in a game.
That was one game.
Okay, is that a problem though? Do you think when you attempt to run the ball 5 times in one game?
It's not ideal, but if that's what it takes to win, I'm just saying they can run the ball. They have the fourth leading rusher in the league, and he's not the main guy. They have Fournette as well, so they can run it. They have talent. I don't know what's going on. I think pass protection is their biggest thing, and I also bring up the chemistry. They have not looked good since they brought in Antonio Brown. That's just me from the outside, but I got a feel. Like, when you're trying to get the ball to all these guys, you got some guys that aren't happy, particularly one guy, the guy you brought in that you didn't really need to bring in.
Right. It could have mixed up the, you know, the chemistry in the room. I don't know if that's just a coincidence that they haven't played as well since they brought him in, but there certainly could be something to that.
There's a lot of footballs. You only have one football, but there's a lot of people you're trying to please, and I think that's difficult. You can keep throwing names, you know, and that looks good on paper. You know, remember when the Redskins did that? We always reference that. The Falcons, I mean, there's been teams that have tried to do it, and, you know, rarely does it work where you just throw a bunch of names that gets everybody's attention, which is nice to look at. But you also have to try to keep that's a lot of egos. That's a lot of people to try to keep happy. I mean, just look at how many. I don't know how they do it. I really don't. as we're sitting here talking about it. I mean, Ronald Jones, yeah, he can run the ball. They don't forget, they also got Leonard Fournette, and they've got other running backs. But by the way, Frank Gore almost has as many rushing attempts as Ronald Jones. That's where you're wrong. Okay, that's where you, as an offensive play caller, you're doing something wrong. Okay, when Frank Gore, who's 49 years old, has about 18 less attempts on the season than Ronald Jones, then don't tell me they're running the ball enough. That's insane.
That's crazy. I mean, Frank Gore.
What would you base that on? They're averaging 4.2 yards per rush. They have 277 carries for 1,156 yards. That's just under 100 yards rushing per game. It's about average. It's nothing to write home about. So, yeah, maybe they run it a little bit more. I just don't think you put all your eggs into that basket. They've got – I think what's happened is they face some pretty good teams, first of all, some good defenses. But when they can protect Brady, Brady is as good as anybody. But when he is under a rush, then he just can't move. It's the same thing with Phillip Rivers, and that's when he's making the big mistakes.
So let me throw this at you guys, because Greg on Twitter kind of brought this up. You know, do Mike Vrabel and John Robinson look like geniuses for going Ryan Tannehill over Tom Brady? If you took Tom and just landed him on the Titans, this current team, we'll say Lawan is healthy. That offensive line, is this team 8-3? What does it look like? Do you think it changes much?
I think he would be put in a better position with Arthur Smith than he would with Bruce Arians.
I would agree with that.
He's got a way better running game, as we know.
Yep.
To help protect him as well. I think he would have been protected here better. When you come to a way better running back, right? A running game that protects the quarterback, a better offensive line, and a better offensive coordinator. So I don't have any idea what it would look like. Would it be 8-3? Would it look the same? Would it be better? Would it be worse? I have no idea. It looks like we have caught up with Rick Byrd. We'll step away. We'll come back. We'll talk to the future Hall of Famer. Quite an honor for him over the weekend. Talk to him next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're darn tootin', Pete. Thank you. We agree. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Tuesday morning, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey. Smoother than smooth. What a weekend for our next guest, Rick Byrd, longtime Belmont Bruins men's basketball coach, is on the line with us and probably not enjoying doing what he's been doing. He's been on the circuit talking about Rick Byrd, and that's not exactly how Rick likes to operate. But, hey, when you get an honor like that, we're going to ask you to do it. Rick, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, guys. I figure this is the last time anybody's going to care what I say about anything, so I might as well go ahead and do the interviews, right?
I don't believe that, but I did think about you when the news came out on Sunday, and I was like, wow, that's such a cool honor. But now Rick is going to have to get really uncomfortable and talk about himself for a while this week. And so, man, what an honor. What did it mean to you?
I'd have to really pull out a lot of false humility to say that it was just another day. It's, you know, college basketball is all I ever did and wanted to do, and I don't even know that I ever dreamed about being in a National Basketball Hall of Fame of any kind at any point. So. So it is a dream come true, even if I didn't. And it's, what it does is it makes you appreciate all the people that helped you get where you are, starting from mom and dad to all the way through your family now and all the people in between. That's the good part. When you get a nice text or email, you can tell that person how much you appreciate what they've meant to you.
Well, what did mom and dad do, Rick?
Like any parents, they got me there. They were interested in in what I was doing. They let me make choices about what sports I wanted to play or didn't want to play, or but they cared. They were there. You know, my dad was a sports writer, and so he had a natural interest, but he was the perfect parent, little league parent, bitty league basketball parent, high school parent. He never did anything but support the coach and the people that that I was playing for, and didn't let me whine or complain. Didn't yell at the referees, that kind of stuff. So he was a really humble man, and just wanted what was best for me, and wanted to give me the chance to make that decision and my choices.
That's great. When you first took the post, what was your mindset going in back at the beginning days? And then the follow-up to that is, when did you know, because we always ask this of players, like, when did you know, like, I got this. Like, I can handle this. I understand how this works and what I need to do to be successful. How would you answer that?
Well, your first part of the question, when I took the post, meaning at Belmont or just mm-hmm. my first
yeah,
job?
Let's go with Belmont. Like, when you walked into that job, what did you think you were signing up for?
Well, I knew I was signing up for our rival a couple of miles down the road were the NAIA national champions, and so that the bar was pretty high. And yet, as I have said many, many times over the years, Lipscomb, whether they like it or not, deserves a ton of credit for Belmont's basketball success, because let's just say that they and Trevecca was very, very good at the time, and NAIA had been NAIA programs, then I wouldn't have got pushed. I just wouldn't have been pushed to get as good as we got. So that's I thought when I came here, I thought Belmont had great potential as an institution. It was gaining enrollment every year when a lot of smaller colleges were not. It was in a great city that was growing. Who knew how much it was going to grow? And I just saw a lot of potential. But all I saw was an NAIA program. I certainly didn't see, I certainly didn't see beating North Carolina or UCLA one day when I came here. And I'm not a big goal setting guy. I'm just more of a day to day. Let's do the best we can here and see where that takes us. And it's kind of what myself and our staff did throughout the years. I don't know about your second question's an interesting one. I don't think I ever felt like I've got this.
Really?
I think that's healthy. There's different thoughts about going into games, and some people would say you've got to really believe you're going to win this game, and you've got to tell your players you really believe you're going to win this game, and they've got to see that. And I was almost the opposite as a coach. I saw all the ways we could lose it. Now, I'm not saying I told the team that, but I told them plenty. If we don't do this, this is what they'll do. And no matter how bad they were, I could find ways to make our guys understand if we don't do things right, we're going to get beat. And sometimes you did get beat by people you shouldn't lose to. But I'm not saying I didn't get to the point where I thought I belonged in the profession I was in. I know better than anybody, except maybe my assistant coaches, what my limitations are as a basketball coach. And so you get there and you start thinking you've got it, and that means you really don't have it.
That's interesting. Rick Bird on the line with us, going to be put into the College Basketball Hall of Fame, part of the 2021 class. We were actually talking about that. We've talked about it a lot on the show today, just what drives competitors, what drives coaches, what drives players, what's that motivating, what what keeps them going, what keeps those competitive juices going. And I'd like to go there with you because you kind of were starting to touch on that. So if you didn't really have that moment where you said, I got this, I know how I can make this work, how my style, this style, will be successful, then what was it over the years? Like what was keeping your internal flame going, your competitive juices always going for decades?
I think that's born into you, frankly. I don't, or you know, that's probably not entirely fair. I mean, I think you learn things from people you're around about this is the way you do things. And my dad, for example, was no taskmaster. He wasn't actually. He was probably a little bit off, but I could see how hard he worked. I could see his value set, and for some reason, I just never. I didn't want to do anything halfway. I didn't want to leave stones unturned. I just think if you've got a job to do, you do it as good as you can do it, and I don't think that's heroic. If you may not want to get in the car and drive to, you know, to Atlanta to watch a kid play high school basketball game, but you do it, you make that 7-hour, 8-hour round trip, because if you start thinking you don't need to do that or you shouldn't do this or that's too hard, then that's just going to bleed over into everything else you do. I don't know. You know, there's just you're either competitive and driven for whatever reason or you're not, and I think I was driven. You're asking me to be a psychologist or psychiatrist or something, and I'm not.
Deep well, questions today.
I was like, yeah,
hard
well.
Questions. These are hard questions. Usually you don't want to ask hard questions.
Well, this is quite an honor and well-deserved. I just want to pick the brain of a Hall of Fame coach. That's all. I'm just trying to learn from this interview.
Well, and so far it's pretty disappointing, isn't it?
Not at all. So I'm going to ask you, this is going to be the last one, and then I'm going to get out of the way. If you could change one thing besides the obvious, the outcome, and go back and do that, coach that Duke game over, what would you change? Like I said, other than the obvious, you win rather than lose by a point. What would you have done differently?
There's probably a little. there's probably one thing that leads to another that I would change. I certainly would do a better job on the baseline out of bounds play when we had a chance to take the lead late, and we just really messed it up and threw a little lob pass that. People in the wrong spots. We called it without calling a timeout. And anyway, and then we Alex Renfro, our guard, had a great game that game, and we had a 1-point lead with about 45 seconds to go, and he, we tried to do a little screen and roll for him, but we didn't clear the side out, and our defender's man. Our player rose out of the corner and brought his man into Alex's way. He had to reduce field, take a tough shot. We got a bad shot out of that. I don't know. I think about that game a lot. probably gets more disappointing the years that go on because, you know, even though we lost it, it was quite a almost euphoric feeling to experience that night and to get the credit that we did get for playing Duke to 1 point. So, you know, in a way it didn't hurt as much as maybe people might think at that moment, but it hurts more now than it did then.
That's such an interesting answer because I think all competitors probably feel that way. Like the more removed, you can always think back to those kind of games, no matter what sport you play. We're talking to Rick Bird. He's going to be inducted into the College Basketball Hall of Fame in the class of 2021. Coach, you've mentioned your dad a few times, and as you alluded to, he was a sports writer. So I'm curious, can you remember the first basketball game that he took you to? Like when maybe the light went on for you when you started to get a connection to the game?
No, I can't remember the first game. I you know, I'm sure I tagged along with him, maybe even some University of Tennessee practices when I was really young. What I do remember, and it's, you know, story's been told, so you can stop me if you want to, but as a real young guy, I mean, I hope I was even old enough to make change, but I sold programs before 8, 9 years old at the Tennessee basketball games, and when they blew the buzzer to start the game, I could quit selling programs because, you know, the game started. People don't want them anymore. They were 25 cents. And I went and sat down right underneath his feet underneath the press table. No fancy press table, just tables at that time. And I've got Coach Mears at UT about 10, 12 feet to my right and maybe Adolph Rupp down on the other end, and I'm that close to the action at that high level of basketball, and kind of wonder what else could I have wanted to do after getting to do that.
You know, there's a lot of coaches where you say, well, this guy coached under Dean Smith for a long time, or Rick Pitino, or Denny Crum, or whoever you want to name. So who were the influences for you? I mean, you sort of, you came up with your own system. I don't know.
Yep.
I mean, there's certainly no family tree that you're coming off of. So who were the influences that helped shape some of your concepts?
Well, it was the people that I competed against. You're right. I didn't. I mean, I was a student assistant coach at Tennessee under Coach Mears, and that's the only offense I knew when I was first a head coach. I was 25 years old when I was a head coach at Maryville College, and you know, I just shudder to think how little I knew at that point. If you think I don't think I got it now, you should have seen me then. So it's the people that I coached against, and I can name a bunch of them to you right now. When I was at Lincoln Memorial University, we played Randy Vernon in Cumberland College in Williamsburg, Kentucky, and nobody knows how good a coach he was. And then when I came here, you know, I've got to compete against Don Meyer, and he's legendary for a reason. You talk about a guy who did get it and knew it. That was everything he did in his life was learn teaching basketball. And his 4-out-1 in offense is what we adopted when Joe Bailing in my second year became good enough player to be our 1-in. And, you know, you've got Scott Corley and Scott Speedy and other guys around him that can shoot threes. And that's the way we played almost the rest of my coaching career. And, we played it some differently than what Don does, and Casey plays it some differently than what I did, but it's still the same approach. And so, you know, you just really, you're right, you're exactly right, and I've thought about that a lot. There, you know, Coach Krzyzewski's got a bunch of guys out there coaching. I was assistant for Tom Beaton at Tennessee Tech for 3 years before I went to LMU. And so I just pretty much learned it watching, scouting. You know, this, they do this. That's great. That's a great way to play. That's a great way to guard this. That's a good action to run, all that kind of stuff. Just cheating and stealing stuff from people.
Rick Bird is with us a long time.
Cheating might not be a good word.
Copying? Yeah. Just pilfering?
Stealing,
I don't know.
Stealing is okay. Stealing is okay.
Rick Bird is with us, the Hall of Famer, longtime Belmont basketball coach. And when I say long time, you were there for over 30 years. And I've always been curious of, you know, whether it's you or, you know, Coach K, another coach that has been in one place for that long, of, did you ever realize just how difficult that is? And especially as the environment changes as we go, of, you know, recruiting and the kids changing, and you obviously have to have success and the allure of other jobs, of just what kind of an accomplishment that was to be at one place for as long as you were. Did you think about that at all when you retired, or do you still think about that, of just how difficult it is?
Well, I can see how unusual it is. It wasn't difficult for me, difficult wouldn't be the word, because I was, as soon as I got here, I was, I loved the people that I worked with. I loved the school and what it stood for. It was my privilege to try to bring a basketball program that exemplified the standards that the school had and represented it in a first-class way. And, yeah, a lot of other things have to fall in place that, you know, you've got to be successful. And we of course, went from NAIA to Division I, and there were honestly very few people that survived, very few coaches over the years that survived that particular move, and Belmont stuck with us through some three or four tough years. And then we did have success, but I never wanted to go anywhere else. You know, there are financial reasons that you might think about it, but I quit worrying about climbing the ladder of levels, you know, in the first decade I was at Belmont, because I loved the school, the people, the players I got to recruit, and loved the city of Nashville.
So I was on vacation last week, watched a lot of movies. Blue Chips was one of them. And at the very, I know, random.
You had to go pretty low. I mean, you must have really been searching.
I know. I was watching that, too.
That was not one of the all-time greats.
It's not, but I was scrolling through, and it was on, and I started watching it. But the very end of the movie, when, you know, he quits, and he walks out, and he goes to the court where the kids are playing, and he walks on the court, and he starts teaching. That's kind of what inspired this question. Was that your favorite part of coaching, was just the practice time and the one-on-one with the player and just teaching the fundamentals of the game of basketball?
Or was it doing interviews with the media? Which one did you enjoy more?
Really, this moment right here.
You're on the couch. This is a deep dive into the soul of Rick Bird right now.
I think that's close. I think I would put it more just simply the what I miss and what I enjoy the most, particularly as you do it longer and get older and reflect on things, or the relationships with the players that you had and the opportunity to see them. I mean, they grow up in front of you, and part of your job, and in fact, I think a big part of your job as a coach in college, is to be part of their education and help them end up being better people by the way you go about operating your business. So I miss that, as well as the people on my staff and the people I worked with daily in the athletic staff. Those were really my favorite parts of it. I think as a coach, whatever little gift that I did have was just trying to figure out ways to win. Strategy of the game is, and every game has it, is fascinating to me. And, you know, I can watch a football game and see why pass routes work and that kind of stuff, and see when there's a great play call, and baseball's got tons of strategy in it. So, I like to figure, and so that brought me to be more of an offensive coach. I loved trying to figure out how we could score against that particular defense.
I on the way out, I have to believe another thing that was interesting in your approach year after year is when you built the foundation and everybody came to expect a certain level. And you know how difficult that is to do year in and year out, right? Things happen throughout the course of a season. Rosters turn over and different kids come in and there's a different room. And it's not easy to do. But for you to keep it at that level, I have to believe that that had to weigh on you as well, right? Trying to live up to the standards when you thought of Belmont basketball and Rick Bird. You know, everybody thought, well, you better be flirting with 30 wins every year. Well, this just in. That's not easy to do.
Well, you're right about that. It's a lot of people would look at you and say, well, you know, what about the guy who's losing? He's worried about losing his job. That's a whole lot worse. and I would get that. But there's you can create pressure in a lot of different ways. I think one of the things that I actually enjoyed the most about my time at Belmont was the period when we went from NAIA to Division One, and even though for that five-year period we would have a losing record, it was back to trying to figure out how to win games instead of not lose games. It's not as much fun in a lot of ways to know that you're trying not to lose, and that may seem, I don't know if that anybody can understand that or not, but when you have been fortunate enough to have year in, year out of success, that's kind of what you're thinking about. But I also I appreciate that, because I think you're right, and I think if I was allowed to pick one thing that I thought our program did the best, it was the consistency within our level of basketball. I think since 2004 we had one year and we finished third, and every other year in the conference we were in, we finished first or second. And I think any coach would say that the consistency of success would be the biggest point of pride.
Well, we enjoyed it. I don't know if you enjoyed it, Rick, because you weren't talking about your players. You were having to talk about you. But we enjoyed it, if that makes you feel any better.
What was more unexpected, Darren playing psychiatrist or a Blue Chips reference?
Well, I was lost on the Blue Chips reference. I watch Netflix now, and I haven't seen it on there.
Yeah, it's a thoroughly forgettable movie. There's no question about it.
Rick, well-deserved. Could Thanks. Not be happier for you. It's quite an honor. Soak it up, and we will talk to you down the road. We are not going to go away. Yes, we are. We're going to talk to you. Yeah, we will. We will reach out, and we hope you you'll sign up to do this again, even after this interview.
I will.
Thank you, Rick.
All right, bye-bye.
Rick Bird.
Guys, I do have a trivia question from Blue Chips, though.
Okay.
Because that was my era. Okay, 1994 is the movie. Yep. By the way, what a spectacular interview that was for Coach
Bird. That was awesome.
That was a great interview. And even the reference to the movie Blue Chips did not throw us off the rails. That was great stuff. But it got me thinking. Here's the trivia question. I think I have a good trivia question right
Who
here.
Who was Ed O'Neill in that interview we just did?
It's a good question.
Good question.
Because he played Ed. That was his name.
Yeah, Ed, when are you going to let this crap go?
Ed O'Neill. Okay.
Al Bundy.
So, do you remember, now, if you just watched it, Chase, maybe you can remember, but the three key recruits that, you know, this is a movie, for people that have no idea, haven't seen this movie, I don't blame you, but Nick Nolte is the basketball coach who decides he's going to cheat, he's going to do whatever he has to do for one last hurrah to get the best players. So he recruits three star players, and do you remember the names of them?
Ricky was the one with the tractor, right? The
right.
farm
Ricky,
boy?
Ricky Rowe.
Ricky Rowe was the kid from Indiana, right? Was
yeah,
he from
right.
Indiana?
Well, I believe so, yes. And then Penny Hardaway is played, his character's name is?
Wasn't there a Tony?
No.
No, there was not. Tony was the kid that was already on his team.
Okay. Butch McCray is the name of Penny Hardaway.
Butch McCray.
And the third record is Shaq.
Shaq was Neon.
Neon.
Yeah.
Neon.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's the trivia question. For me, because of the era that I played in for Vanderbilt, I played multiple college basketball games against Neon, Butch McCray, and Ricky Rowe. That's good trivia right there.
How about that?
The guy that played Ricky Rowe, his name is Matt Nover. He played for – we just talked about Matt Nover with Dan Dokich the other day.
Oh, Darren. So did I just make that up because – okay, so he maybe the character in the movie wasn't from Indiana?
Well, he might have been from Indiana. I don't know. They got him a tractor, right? That's
they
the
got
they
cheat.
They got him a tractor so he would sign with Nick Nolte's team. So Matt Nover, who played at Indiana, good, solid player. Penny Hardaway – at Memphis, we played a couple games against him. And, of course, Shaq at LSU. So this is my era. Maybe I should give this movie another try. I remember watching it at the time going, what the heck?
It wasn't like a bad movie.
You had cameos from Rick Pitino, Bobby Knight.
Oh, yeah. Bobby Hurley's in it.
Bobby Hurley, Jerry Tarkanian.
Dick Vitale.
Jim Boeheim, wasn't he in that?
I don't see Jim Boeheim on the list of credits here.
Kevin
Garnett. You're right. You're right. He is in there.
Kevin Garnett was a player, right?
Yeah.
What's funny, against.
What I thought about, because the whole point of what the whole
Alan Houston
wasn't Al. I was just saying, wasn't Alan Houston in there?
Yeah. There's another guy I played a bunch of games against. He's my year. See, these are all the guys that are from, you know, within a year of my high school class. So this is maybe I should have been in there.
The thing that
great.
Was,
like, could have been like a guy coming off the bench for Bobby Knight's team.
Well, you would have had a hair.
Didn't Bobby Hurley? Didn't Bobby Hurley play for Indiana? In the movie?
Well, wasn't that they weren't called, it wasn't Indiana, wasn't it like Western?
Yeah.
Oh, is that what
Western University, right?
But they played Indiana.
No, they played Indiana. Bobby Hurley was on the Indiana team.
Yeah, he was.
And so was Joe Hillman and Greg Graham, two other of Bobby Knight's players.
Oh, you're right. Calvert Chaney.
Calvert Chaney, Eric Anderson. See, they had like the real players from Indiana.
That's right.
Keith Smart was on the Indiana team in the movie.
But the funny thing about it was because of the whole premise of the movie, and then they show Rick Pitino. I'm like, man, this is just ironic. This is irony at its best in the mid-90s of just some of the coaches, but Pitino being one of them.
I would have loved to have been a cameo guy just in a movie, in like a baseball movie, just a person, you know, not even a character with any lines, just being in a game.
Willie, I could see you. I could see so much fun. I could see you in like Major League 4.
Well, you know, but you know what makes a good movie for me, honestly, when you're seeing a sports movie, it really disappoints me when the actual plays don't look good. Right? It can ruin the movie sometimes, right? If the actors,
it just looks fake.
Right. So you want the plays.
Are you really
going to
go there? Then why do you talk about Rocky? I mean, come on, give me a break. Like, Rocky was like the worst boxing ever. You don't hold that against Rocky.
Come on, man. Are you kidding
Willie,
me?
Give me awesome. A stop it.
Come on, I love the boxing.
Stop that.
I wish boxing was like that.
Oh, my gosh. That was the worst ever.
No, the worst boxing ever was
first of all,
last
they missed,
Saturday night. But.
They missed by a foot every swing, and they would just come out swinging
right,
away.
Sound effects. Did you still hear the sound effects?
Come on.
Yeah.
Like 300 blows in a right. Like you take that many punches in a boxing match. I mean, come on. If you're really going to hold that standard, then I don't want you to ever reference Rocky again.
But in Blue Chips, let's give them that. They actually did get really good players to play the games.
Sure.
So
they got actual players.
It looked good. Yeah.
Actual
the
coaches.
The basketball looked good. There's some other movies where it doesn't look so good. Like Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf?
Teen Wolf.
What now happened? We have a Teen Wolf?
What happened? Chase, you know what? This is your fault. I'm blaming you now.
Do we have a prize? Can we play trivia later in the show? What were the two obscure movies that were brought up on the show today? If you can name that.
To find out who's still listening.
Teen Wolf. Blue Jay. Well, you said you watched it, too. I mean, it was like 11 o'clock at night or something.
No, I did.
Like that.
I
haven't seen it, since it came out. I remember... When it first came out, I was like, okay, I'll give it a try. And I was like, this is over the top. It's just way over the top.
I think you should watch it again. It's not a great movie.
Wait a minute. Why is it over the top?
Well, it's so cliche, you know, with the cheating.
You mean because it played out in college basketball? I mean,
maybe it was over the top at the time. Now it's like, it's a biography.
Well, I was going to say,
it was ahead of its time.
I was going to say, exactly. They should get credit for being I mean, come on. Are you
hold
kidding?
On. Do we think that these coaches saw Blue Chips and go, hey, that's not a bad idea. Hey, can we go get this kid a car?
Right, and no coach ever grabbed a basketball and kicked it in the stands, right? Only Nick Nolte? Oh, wait a minute.
You think Rick Pitino might have, like, written parts of the movie, too? Like, they had some coaches, like, help write it and produce it?
This is what I would do.
If I was to cheat, this would be how we do it.
I would have strippers on the recruiting trail. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be the 2020 version of Blue Chips. They'd put the strippers in there.
Yeah. I mean.
Good stuff. We have now hijacked our show with
Blue Chips. I don't think it's that over the top because we've learned.
Because it's true.
But when was that movie? Back in the early 90s?
1994.
Yeah, 94.
I think Elijah just said it. They may have been way ahead of their time. today, I don't think anybody would be surprised by a movie like that about college basketball. I mean, come on. Oh, like, by the way, you think there's ever been a conversation in a gym between a coach and an AD like that? We got to get players
happy.
Look, I just don't want to hear. Just don't tell. I don't want to know anything. Like, that's, you think that's ever happened?
Never.
Never. Speaking of college basketball, Gonzaga and Baylor will be going toe-to-toe for what could be the nation's top ranking in college basketball. By the way, a lot of blue bloods going tonight, right? Kansas, Kentucky, Michigan State, and Duke. And DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is giving all college basketball fans who sign up right now a chance to win $100 when betting on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win this big clash of the Titans in the college basketball world. Plus, you'll get a deposit bonus up to $1,000 when signing up and using the promo code 1025GAME. All you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025GAME. And when you sign up, you'll have your shot to turn $1 into $100 when betting on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win the game. That code again, 1025GAME, during sign-up for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. Ian Eagle will be on the call on CBS for the Titans and the Browns on Sunday at Nissan Stadium. We will talk to him to start the third hour of the program. There is some news out of Cleveland. Ian Rapoport, I saw he tweeted out that the Browns have activated Myles Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes, from the reserve COVID-19 list. They've also, though, placed Ronnie Harrison Jr. with a shoulder injury on IR. He's still got the chance to return late in the season. So, David Quisenberry, good
come
first game
down
against Indianapolis, yeah, but now you're going up against one of the best in the league in Myles Garrett. So he will have his hands full on Sunday.
You know what I'd be saying? A little help. A little help.
You think?
Can I get a tight end over here? Can I get a fullback over here?
Chip, 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 chip.
Chip, 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 chip.
Chip, 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 chip.
So,
triple deep, triple deep.
Did we decide, are we doing our rankings today or are we going to wait till tomorrow?
No, I just, let's see if this game happens.
Okay.
You know, if something, you know, if they're not going to play Wednesday, we're going to find out today. You know, we'll find out probably today if for some reason that game is just not going to happen. And then we'll adjust. But if it's going to happen tomorrow, then let's just wait. Because it's a pretty critical game, right? Like, we need to know what the Ravens and the Steelers, what happens in that game.
I did just out of curiosity throw out on my Twitter account at Chase Young Game, if you were doing a top 10 like we do, where would you put the Titans right now? And we can discuss this particular tweet a little bit later, but somebody, Darren, you and I know, Big Coom, Big C, says power rating wise, they are still behind Buffalo, the Rams, Seattle, Tampa Bay, New Orleans, Indy, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Baltimore, Green Bay. I know folks will point to the last 2 weeks, but they caught Baltimore as a COVID hit happened and Indy was down 5 starters. They are dogs to both teams on neutral of games are played next week. Or I'm some typo there, but they're dogs. He's saying there, okay, they would man be dogs to both.
Okay, man.
Agree or disagree?
Come on, man. Like there's,
well, we do,
there's all these
10,
other
we'll
juggernauts
out
there that are perfect and have no flaws. Everybody's got issues.
And I think it changes every week. So
that's why I think this,
I have had the Titans in my top 10 both weeks from the start.
Well, if you don't think this year is going to produce, you know, craziness, I just think you're crazy. If there's ever a year that it's not going to be chalk, I just don't see it. I mean, I think the playoffs are going to be wide open unless we're talking about the representative of the NFC East. Okay, fine, we can eliminate them. They're not going to make a run to the Super Bowl. I get it. Kansas City is going to be the favorite, but don't tell me Kansas City can't lose. They can. They can lose. Nobody's Agreed. Invincible this year. New Orleans is not invincible. We may think they're the best team in the NFC, but they can lose on any given Sunday. And, no, that's not me just throwing out a cliche. That's just saying, look, this year, anybody in the NFC could lose. I don't think you could feel that strongly about anybody. In fact, we'll ask Ian Eagle to start things off. In fact, we'll do that. He'll be in the booth for this matchup. We had Joe Thomas earlier in the show. Now Ian Eagle, 2-8-3 teams clashing in Nashville on Sunday at Nissan Stadium. We'll talk to him next to start the third hour. Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Bretzky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.